I'm going to open your Bibles to Isaiah chapter 28. Isaiah 28, when you get there, you might want to put your marker. Isaiah 28. Freddie mentioned about our meeting. Just remind ourselves about that. It'll be the first different speaker meeting that we've had since I've been here, so I'm really excited about that. We'll have different people from the area. Next Sunday morning, Bill Hall will be with us. Sunday evening, Kyle Ellison from the Mount Olive Church will be with us. Remember that our periods of worship will change, being that our meetings, we'll go to our meeting schedule, 9:45 and 10:40 that morning. At 3 o'clock next Sunday, we'll have a singing. And then at 4 o'clock, we'll have evening worship. Also, next Sunday, being the second Sunday of the month, it's our regular scheduled home study for our young adults and our teen class. I spoke with Kyle a couple days ago. He's going to teach that class for us. It'll be next Sunday night at the Biggs' home, and Kyle's going to stay over after our service and teach that. So we plan to get your children and grandchildren there for that. For those visiting with us, we've been reading through in our readings the book of Isaiah, and what I want us to do every now and then, we're kind of pulling out sections to help us with those readings. Reading Isaiah is not easy to do. Let me back up. It's not easy for me. It's a hard book to read. It's written in some poetic language, and that makes it a little bit different. It's written not always in chronological order. That makes it a little bit different because we've been trained to read differently than that. It's long. Let's just confess on that. Sometimes just because of its longness, we just kind of get lost maybe in some of the shuffle. And so what I want us to do is we work our way through it. Every month and a half or so, we're just trying to take section by section, and hopefully it'll help you as we make our way through these readings. Chapters 28 through 35 is a particular section. It's called the Book of Woes. Let me give you an example of that. Look in chapter 28, verse 1. Woe to the crown of pride. Look in chapter 29, verse 1. Woe to Ariel, the city of David. Chapter 30, that we just read. Chapter 30, verse 1, woe to the rebellious children. Do you get the point? That's enough. We'll see them as we work our way through. But chapters 28 through 35 is a section. It's a collective text. And it's known as the Book of Woes. The Book of Doom. Where these woes are being pronounced among the nations, including Jerusalem, including Judah. If you can picture in your mind the chronology, we're in the time period of Hezekiah. If you can kind of, if that gives you kind of a status point, a foundational level there. When you look at that word woe, on the word study, in some of those texts, it's saying woe as in doom is imminent. Doom is coming. It's interesting that sometimes the word is being used as a way of you're as good as dead. Woe to you, as good as dead. The destruction is certain. And so that's what this section is about. One of the interesting things about it that we'll look at the latter part of our study, interspersed through all of these woes, just kind of shoved here and there, are messianic promises. Kind of interesting that in the book of woes, the book of doom, the book of better, same as dead, there's these little paragraphs, these little small sections of something better coming, glorious days ahead. But we'll look at that at our end. What I want us to do, first of all, let's just look through the book of woe. What is it that's being described as the causer, if that's even a word, but you know what I mean, the causing of doom? What is it? And when we get through with this section, it's really shocking how similar it looks to our culture. The very thing that Isaiah was declaring woe on all these years ago, it's going to sound like we're reading our newspapers in a lot of sense. So let's work our way through the book of woes. Look in chapter 28. In verse 7, look about, and let's talk, find out who's that description here. In chapter 7, about halfway down, he says, the priest and the prophets. He's talking to religious leaders. Look in verse 14. The last phrase of verse 14.
He's talking about scornful men that rule the people in Jerusalem. So when we get, the point is, he's not talking some hypothetical thing, or he's not talking about people you don't know, or they didn't know. He's describing woes, and he is talking about religious leaders, and he's talking about political leaders. So this is going to high places, so to speak. And if you'll notice, the first thing that's mentioned is it was doom is coming because of drunkenness. Look in verse 1. Woe to the crown of pride, to the drunkenness of Ephraim, the glory of beauty fading like a flower. Verse 7. They have erred through the wine, through the strong drink. It goes on later into that text. It says, because of the wine, they are out of their way through strong drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. And remember, we're talking about religious leaders here. We're talking about people with authority, so to speak. But they don't make good decisions. They're not making good. They can't see what they need to see. They can't make proper judgments when they need to make proper judgments. And it's because of drinking. The drunkenness that went on with that. And he says, doom comes from that. Look in verse 3. The crown. Actually, back into verse 1. Woe to the crown of pride. Verse 3. The crown of pride. You've got this arrogance, this haughtiness. And he says, that is a road that leads to doom. Woe to that. Look in verse 15. Look at the last phrase in verse 15. The very last phrase. It speaks of those who have taken refuge in a lie and under falsehoods have hidden themselves. The idea of being deceived by untruthful things. What they consider to be a reliable promise is nothing but a deceitful lie. They are taking comfort in things that really don't lead to any comfort at all. And again, look at that through a spiritual prism. Maybe they're taking their pride. I am from the seed of Abraham. I'm from the tribe of Benjamin. I'm from the tribe of Judah. Was that ever a problem among God's people under the law of Moses? Maybe they have this deception of, this is the city of David. Nothing will happen here. It doesn't matter what goes on to the nation to the north. Doesn't matter what happens in these nations. I know other nations can fall, but we are the nation and the city of David. We're good. Isaiah doesn't go into the details here, but we know other passages that give us a mindset. But whatever's going on in verse 15, he says they have believed a lie. They have taken refuge in it. And they have hidden themselves in a falsehood. Now, before we go any farther, let's just start with chapter 28. Does any of this look a little bit familiar? The drunkenness of a nation, the pride of a nation or of a people, taking comfort in maybe that pride. And we look at our culture and we see drunkenness. Fall, you got ball going on, ball games every day. You can't watch a ball game that the commercials don't come on. And at least every other one seems to be advertising some type of beer, some type of drinking. Bible full. This is not the only woe. We can turn to Proverbs. We can turn to wisdom from above, where all the woes that alcohol brings. And yet, we think we're the loophole. We think we as the individual are the exception to that. I know it caused trouble in this family. I know it caused trouble with... It won't cause trouble in my house. I can handle this. We can handle this. Oh, it's... Does that sound a little prideful? Does that sound a little bit maybe like taking some comfort in a deception? Who do we think we are? To argue against the woes of the Creator of this world. Is pride a problem? There was a story, I'm guessing, a joke, a made-up story, but it's still fun to think of. Apparently, there was a man who the town was going to honor as being the most humble person in the town. When he showed up to get the award, they took it away from him. I know that's a joke, but there's a point to be made. As soon as we recognize and think about how humble we are, how much control we've got of our pride, maybe that's a sign we don't have as much control of it as we think. In a nation like this, where we are so blessed, where we have so much, where in a church like this, where we have so many people with so many talents and so many abilities, and there's so many open doors that's made available to us in all realms of life, if we're not careful, if we don't constantly be on guard, we can start tallying up all the things we've done and all the things we've accomplished and all the things that came because of our hard study and our sweat and our work. And pride's a problem. But there's a woe that Isaiah's trying to get us to see. The deception, the looking for a loophole that we're going to fit. We studied this morning about marriage and divorce and some very clear passages. But there's been a lot of people who misread how clear they are when it comes to their daughter, their son, their mama, their daddy, their best friends. And we deceive ourselves. And we feel good about it because we've deceived ourselves so well. Isaiah is saying, wake up. Because doom is what comes from these things. Look in chapter 29. By 29, again, the chronology is not always there in Isaiah. But what we have in chapter 29 is Israel has already fallen. If you can kind of go back to the divided period transitioning into that Judah alone period. Israel has fallen to Assyria. And Sennacherib, who we'll read about more as we keep working our way through the book. Sennacherib has now got his eyes on Judah. Like, we got these. While we're here, let's just make it a double and we'll just go down and we'll take care of them too. And by the time of chapter 29, Jerusalem is under siege. Siege takes a long time. It takes years to finally for a siege to always choke somebody out. But that's what's happening. And in verse 1, it says, woe to Ariel, the city where David dwelt. Make no mistake about it. Ariel is being used as a word for Jerusalem. The root with the study of that, Ariel means the Lion of Judah. Isn't that interesting? The Lion of Judah, the place where David dwelt. And now there's a siege going on. Look in verse 3. It's beginning to have its effect. Verse 3 says, I will camp against you round about. They have encircled the walls. They have camped and they have blocked it off. No going, no coming. I will camp against you round about. I will lay siege against you with a mount. And no, it's like a mountain around them. There is a wall around the wall. I will raise forts against you. There's a bunch of soldiers out there. Look in verse 8. It'll be like when a hungry man dreams and he eats. He wakes up, soul is empty. It'll be like a thirsty man dreaming and he drinks. But he wakes up and he is faint and it's going to be like, you're going to be in want. You're going to be in need. And you're going to have these appetites. And you're going to have dreams that they're being fulfilled. And you wake up and it's all an illusion. Remember chapter 15 or chapter 28 verse 15? Deceived. Your dreams are going to deceive you. You're going to think things are going to get better. You're going to think it's going to work out. And then you're going to wake up from that illusion and you're still going to be hungry, you're still going to be thirsty, and you're still going to be in need. That's what's coming to the city. But what about the woe? What's causing all of this stuff? Chapter 29, look in verse 13. Wherefore the Lord said, for as much, does this sound familiar? For as much as this people draws near me with their mouth, and with their lips they honor me, but they've removed their heart far from me. Their fear is gone. Does that sound familiar? Here's where somebody would raise their hand. No, no, wait a minute. Now, I thought that was in Matthew 15. It is. And we have conditioned ourselves to think that that's where it originates. Jesus was quoting in Matthew 15. He was applying this verse to his generation. But here's the text. It comes from the book of woes. Destruction is coming. Pain is coming. Hurt is coming, and it's coming to the city of David. And it's because you don't love me a bit. Oh, you're still going through the motions. You're still doing the stuff. You're acting, but it's out of habit and ritual. It's not out of loyalty. It's not out of care. It's not because you love me and want to show appreciation for me. It says you're doing things, but it's all just lip service. Honoring me with your mouth, your heart is a million miles away. And the point is, woe, doom, as good as dead. That's what this attitude leads us to. That's the woe Isaiah is pronouncing through the Spirit. And again, does that sound familiar? Can me and you, can we be guilty of getting half of John chapter 4 right? They that worship me must worship me in spirit and in truth. And so we have sang, and we have remembered his death and burial and resurrection, and he's coming again. And we've given cheerfully. We've done. But we didn't get the spirit part. We weren't engaged. We were just going through the motions. Rituals have been done. Honoring through action has been done. Heart far from me. Can this be possible today? Well, you know it can be possible. If we're honest, there's times we're guilty of it. Isaiah, all these years later, if we'll let him, can still get our attention. Woe to this outward action where there's no desire and honor and love being shown. Look in chapter 30. The one Larry just read for us. Chapter 30. Verse 1. Woe to the rebellious children. Verse 9. This is a rebellious people. Well, we can look back through the Old Testament. We can look back through the history of the Jewish nation that we have through Scripture. We see that. We see rebellion. But it's really interesting how it's described in this particular case with this generation. Look back in chapter 1. Woe to the rebellious... I'm sorry, chapter 1. I meant verse 1. Excuse me. Chapter 30, verse 1. Woe to the rebellious children, says the Lord, that take counsel, but not from me. That's the context of this rebellion. When me and you hear the word rebellion, we think of stubbornness. We think of hard-heartedness. We think of, I don't care what it says. But that's not what he's describing here. This is a description of rebelliousness. And they were called that twice in this text. And it was because they didn't consult him. It's because they never took counsel of him. You see, rebellion doesn't always mean hard-heartedness and stubbornness. Here's a case of it. Rebellious being described as, they just never looked to see what I wanted. What I wanted was of no effect to them, no cause to them, no concern to them. They did what they want, and they never checked with me to see how I felt about it. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But is that not what it says? You took counsel, but not from me. Does that sound familiar? A group of people getting together. How can we make the church grow? How can we get more people in here? Well, we can get them in with the basketball gym. That'll get people in. Yes, it will. We can get people in if we start having ice cream. Yes, it will. We can get yes, it will. Well, there's counsel being given. We're not looking from the Lord for answers. And that is a woe. That is doom pronounced. That is rebelliousness in this particular context. And it's interesting how the phrase ends. Look at how the verse ends. Verse 1, woe to those rebellious children, says the Lord. They take counsel, but it's not for me. They that cover with the covering, but not of my spirit, that they add sin to sin. That's how serious it is. The very spirit of, let's just do what we want to do and not worry about what God says about it. Well, that's a sinful spirit in and of itself. But then when we apply that, we start doing things without having counsel from him. We never look to see how he feels about it. Well, that becomes sin. We add sin to sin. The sinful spirit of not caring enough to even bother ourselves with what he wants. And then the actions that are taken that are contrary to that, we're adding sin to sin. It's rebelliousness. And it's doom. Isaiah trying to wake us up.
all these years later. Look in chapter 31. Verse 1.
Woe to them who go down to Egypt for help and stay on horses and trust in chariots because there are many. Trust in horsemen because they are very strong. But they don't look to the Holy One of Israel. They don't seek the Lord.
And I don't know if it'd be true in all the translations, but many of the translations there have an exclamation point.
Woe to those who think that the answer to a big army is a bigger army. Woe to those who think that the answer to a lot of chariots is to go to Egypt because they've got more chariots. And they never work about seeing what the Lord thinks about it. They do not look to the Holy One. They neither seek the Lord. And so what you got here is, in this particular case, it's talking about in armies and chariots and soldiers and stuff.
Well, let's me and you bring it up several thousand years, and let's just change the stuff. We don't put our trust in chariots, but we might put it in our bank account. We don't put our trust in soldiers, but we might put it in our degree. We don't put our trust in this, but we might put it in our whatever. Me and you got a lot of stuff. And if we get priorities askew, and we let the thorns do what the parable said thorns do, we choke out spiritual fruits, and we got a lot of stuff that we're putting a lot of comfort in, a lot of confidence in. And that's going to be what we fall back on. By the way, a little interesting side bit about the wording here. Chapter 31 verse 1 is when woe seems to be under that the Hebrew description of as good as dead. You're going to go to Egypt for your help. You're going to go to Egypt for soldiers. You're going to go to Egypt for all this stuff. You're as good as dead. Because it's not going to provide. It's not going to handle the issue. Chapter 34, just a summary. Look at some of the how descriptive it is. Just vivid destruction of a destroyed enemy. Woe and doom and death is coming. And chapter 34 just kind of puts it in a nutshell. Chapter 34, verse 2. The indignation of the Lord is upon all the nations, His fury on their armies. He will utterly destroy them. He has delivered them to slaughter. The slain will be cast out, and their stink will come up out of their carcasses, and the mountains will melt with their blood. Verse 8, it's the day of the Lord. You see that a lot of times, that phrase, so often in the prophetic languages, the words of the prophets. It's the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord's vengeance. The year of the recompense for the controversy of Zion. The streams shall be turned to pitch. The dust into brimstone. The land will become a burning pitch. It will not be quenched. Night or day. Destruction's coming. Doom is coming. As good as death is coming. And here are the reasons. Drunkenness and pride and deceived by lies and acting out of loyalty, not out of honor and love. Rebellious heart. Putting trust in things other than the king himself, etc. That's the book of woes. That's what this section is about. And as again, you run back through that and they sound so familiar. We're still struggling today with some of those very things. They could eat at our very spirituality. Before we talk about those interspersements of the Messiah prophecies, let's just make a couple of applications. Look back in chapter 28. Some interesting points that we can pull out from some of these, from the midst of some of these woes. In chapter 28, verse 20. Remember, he had described them back in chapter verse 15. You have believed a lie. You've taken refuge in a lie. And you've hid yourselves under that lie. You feel good about it. You feel confident about it. But there's no reality to it. It's an illusion. You're dreaming about food and water, but you still wake up hungry and thirsty. There's no substance. Look at verse 20. It gives this imagery. The bed is shorter than a man can stretch himself on. The covering is narrower that he can wrap himself with.
And so you got this imagery in the midst of this woe of this false sense of security. You're tired, you're sleepy, you're worn out, and you see this bed, and it gives you so much hope. It gives you so much comfort. You've got this sense of rest coming and protection coming, and then you lay down on it. There's no comfort to be had. You don't fit. You're screaming. You're turning. You're flipping. You got this blanket on you, but it doesn't cover anything. There's no warmth. There's no security from it. And we have a statement that I know we've heard you've used, and have probably had it used on you. You made your bed. And everybody in this room that's an adult can fill it in the blank. You've made your bed. Now lay in it. Well, there's a reality to that. There are consequences to our actions. But have we ever thought about remaking the bed? If we're not careful, what happens is we just get comfortable being uncomfortable. We have this issue in our life. We have this weakness in our life. And we just let it hang around like a 30-year mortgage. And it just, but in time, we just stop thinking about it. It just kind of becomes part of us. And we get comfortable having whatever this weakness might be. He's describing here a lack of security, a lack of peace, a lack of the ability to find true, real rest. And in the spiritual sense, we'll never find that unless we change this bed that's being described here. If there's changes we've got to make, then let's make them. Don't keep laying in that bed. We can change the bed. To whatever extent that might be real. Look in chapter 29. Another application. And that is all of this that we've looked at. All of these woes. All of this stuff that's happening in Israel. All of the siege that's about to get real in Judah. God was behind every last bit of it. None of this was blind luck. None of this was, wow, we sure was at the wrong place at the wrong time. No, the God of heaven is acting. A day of the Lord's being passed. Look in verse 14 of chapter 29. Therefore, behold, I will proceed to do a marvelous work among the people. A marvelous work and a wonder. The wisdom of these wise men will perish, and the understanding of the prudent will be hidden. I'm fixing to do something that the smartest of you won't be able to figure out, is what he's saying. You're not going to get this from philosophers. You're not going to be able to go to counselors and figure this out. I'm acting, and it's going to be incredible. Marvelous work and a wonder. Don't think that the Assyrian destruction of Israel was bad timing. That was God doing a marvelous work and a wonder. He's passing judgment. Don't think that Babylon's conquering of Judah 100 or so years later. Don't think that was just bad luck. No, that was God doing a marvelous work and a wonder. And don't think that, etc. This is God working. Look back into chapter 28. There's an earthly example that he gives. I'm not a farmer. You know I'm not a farmer. There's a bunch of people here who could teach this by principle a whole lot more than me. But in chapter 28, verse 23, he goes to the farm that people would understand, and he's teaching a principle out of it. In verse 24, he says, does the plowman plow all day to sow? Does he open and break the clods of the ground? And when he has made plain the face thereof, does he not cast abroad the fitches and scatter the cumin, etc.? What he's saying is, you know what farmers do. They don't just break the ground to break the ground. They don't just get out there and clean it all up and then just look at it. And they don't break it so that they can go out the next day and just break it again. And the next day break it again. No, he says they have a reason for what they do. They break the ground, verse 23. Or 24 rather. And then in verse 25, then they start scattering the seed. They're looking for fruit of their labors. Well, some of those seeds were really, really small. And some of those seeds, and farmers here today familiar with this, some are really kind of fragile, so to speak. In verse 27, he says, the fitches are not threshed with a threshing instrument, neither is a cart wheeled and turned on the common. And he goes on, the point he's making is, some of those seeds are really, really fine. And they're really tender. And so you don't throw them out there and then put this heavy oxen on them. Put this heavy instrument on them because you might just smash them to uselessness. Now he's saying all of that to make a point. He's using a lesson in agriculture to show the great wisdom and natural order of this judgment. Just like planting follows plowing, judgment follows these woes. And there's going to be a threshing, but it won't be to the point that they're just useless. He's not going to thresh to the point that there's nothing left. If this was a Bible class, I'd say, give me the name, a remnant. Oh, there's going to be a threshing, all right. But just like farmers don't destroy all their seed, God's making the point, I know what I'm doing. And everything I do has a purpose, and it's all building toward spiritual fruit. This is God at work. Assyria is just His tool. And now look in chapter 33. We didn't look at this when we were doing the woes, but now we get it. Because He's talking now to the enemy. Look in chapter 33, verse 1. Woe to you that spoils. A little bit farther down. Woe to you that deals treacherously. When you will stop the spoiling, you will be spoiled. Paraphrase that. Assyria, right now, you're the one that you're my tool. You're my thresher. And you're the one clearing the fields for me. But when the time comes, you're going to be the one who smashed as well. You will go down. The spoiler will be spoiled. Does that sound familiar? Remember when Habakkuk was questioning God? I just don't understand this. Lord, it doesn't make any sense. When you're to do something about the sin down here? I am doing something. I'm raising up the Babylonians. Well, God, that doesn't make any sense. They're worse than we are. You're not going to use them, are you? And the answer to Habakkuk was, they're my tool. I'm using them for my purpose. And then I'll punish them as well. Again, this is all under God's handiwork. This is His eyes, and He's a part of this. I'm going to give you another real quick application to make, and that is, this was all being written down. There were things Isaiah didn't know. You know, the eunuch wasn't the only one who didn't know who that lamb was in Isaiah 53. Isaiah himself wouldn't have understood that. But here's what he did understand. He understood that the prophecies he was making was going to be written and collected. So here's what he tells them to do. Look in chapter 30, verse 8. He says, go and write it down before them in a tablet, and note it in a book, that it may be for the time to come forever. Look in chapter 34. He knew this. He knew all this was being collected. And what he's telling them, he's basically putting them to the challenge. Verse 16 of chapter 34, seek out the book of the Lord and read it. Not one of these will fail. Latter part of the verse, for my mouth has commanded it, and His Spirit will gather it. The point he's making is, there's this official record being made of this doom. Official record is being made of this coming destruction. And basically what he's saying is, you can verify it after I'm long dead. And we know from secular history, Isaiah was killed by the people that didn't like his prophecies. So, after I'm dead, you go get this book. You go read about what I've said is going to happen. Because I'm speaking through the Spirit. And God doesn't back out on His words. He doesn't take His words back. People may renege on what they tell you. Nations may renege on what they tell you. The point He's making is, God will not. So you write this down. And then you go read it. And you'll see that every bit of it is true. So He's challenging them. And, how you like the Book of Woes? You going to enjoy having this read for us for the next month or so? This is bad stuff. And now it gets really interesting. That scattered through all of this are these glorious little pockets of something better coming. Look at chapter 32. A messianic promise that is just so contrary to everything that we've seen so far in this section. This is not fun reading. This is not happy time here. This is doom and destruction and as good as dead. And it all sounds horrible. And everything we've looked at so far is. And now, in the middle of all of that, chapter 32, verse 1.
Behold, a king will reign in righteousness, and princes will rule in judgment. Wasn't a whole lot of righteous and good judges during the days of the United Kingdom and divided kingdom, huh? But there's a king coming. Verse 3. The eyes of them that see will not be dim, and the ears of them that hear will listen. The heart of the rash will understand knowledge, and the tongue of the stammerers will be ready to speak plainly. That's a contrast to everything we've seen so far. What we've seen so far is people that would not listen. He says the day's coming, people will. People that would not obey. They wouldn't even check to see what he wanted. There's a king coming, and there's going to be a generation who will honor him. Verse 17, and the work of righteousness will be peace. There's better days ahead because there are people coming who will honor and love, and it won't be just that ritual stuff we read of earlier. Now let's just pause just a minute. Can me and you be a fulfillment of that prophecy? Can we be a part of this glorious group that will listen and will heed and will understand? Because we can be. We know who that king is. Look at chapter 33. In the midst of all this woe, you have this ray of light. Chapter 33, verse 15. He that walks righteously and speaks uprightly, he that despises the gain of oppressions and shakes his hands from holding of bribes, he that stops his ears from the hearing of blood and shuts his eyes from the seeing of evil, he will dwell on high. We don't have to be doomed. And we don't have to be, spiritually speaking, as good as dead. We can dwell with the King on high if we'll have character traits that allow us to do that. Look at chapter 35. Here's what it all comes down to. How do we live? How do we behave? What's our character? Chapter 35, verse 8. A highway there shall be, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean will not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring through fools shall not enter therein. Again, well, we travel that path. There is a way to the King. Chapter 33, there is a way to dwell with Him. Chapter 35, there is a way to get to Him. There is a path. There is a way. Way of righteousness, the way of holiness. Does that sound familiar to Matthew chapter 7? It's narrow, but it's a way. Does that sound familiar to 1 Peter chapter 1? I am holy. You will be holy. My people will be holy. There is a path of holiness. Get your songbooks out. Christ is the way to that path. I am the way. I'm the truth. I'm the light. Again, I didn't... we're not teaching this to put everybody in a bummer mood. I hope we didn't ruin anybody's day. There's a lot of vivid, bad... it's called the Book of Woes for a reason. But in the middle of all of that is a glorious highway of holiness that me and you have been invited to walk on. And it's made possible for us to be on it. And we look at all those woes, every last one of them, and we see how similar they are to where you and I live and what me and you have to deal with. And in the midst of all of this, glory is possible. And holiness and righteousness is possible. We learn all of that through the Book of Woes. Isaiah so long ago helping us out today. Aren't you thankful for it? So I know it can be cumbersome. And I know some of those readings can be a little mind-boggling. Remember the text. Just remember this section for the next month or so as we work our way through it. And look for those glorious signs. And let's take advantage of them. If you're not a Christian, but you believe Jesus is God's Son and He died for your salvation, He is the way. He's the one that makes righteousness and holiness possible. But unlike those of Isaiah's day, we're going to have to seek His counsel. We're going to have to find out what He wants. And what He wants is you to confess Him as your King. He wants you to repent of your sins that He had to die because of. He wants you to be baptized to wash those sins away. You can do that today.
For those of us that are Christian, maybe we honest assessment is some of those woes are awful close to home. It's called repenting, and we've got time and opportunity to do it. Take advantage while we stand and sing.